Hi and welcome to Limitless Mind, Limitless Body. I'm John Swanepoel. Today I'm here with Paula Ralph. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
It's so cool to catch up with you again. It's been a long time, eh?
It has. It's really nice to be back.
Okay. So I'm here with Paula Ralph. And she's a good mate of mine. She went over to Ireland for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I was over for 4 years.
So what did you used to do before you went? So what's your background?
My background is a pharmacist, where I had two shops in Whakatane, and then sold those and just locumed around the community, around Tokoroa, Mount Maunganui, Tauranga, Waihi, all over the place.
Okay.
And that was great too. However, when I went to Ireland, I'd kind of had enough of being a pharmacist, so I chose not to register over there.
Okay. So what did you do instead?
Well, I had been doing a whole bunch of extra training with neuroscience and mind-body techniques and human behaviour. So I packaged everything I knew and have been applying it to women's health.
Okay.
Helping women with their feminine health. At more of an emotional and mind-body level.
Okay. So getting away from the drugs?
Sometimes it does, and that's really great. Sometimes it actually works where the drugs actually have absolutely no use.
Okay. But then the drugs do have use, though, eh?
Sometimes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why get rid of something that works for some people?
So it's just finding a balance, right?
Absolutely.
And not discrediting or discounting anything.
I fully agree with that. Yeah. If something, well, I always said, even in my pharmacies, if someone said something works, who am I to say, no, it didn't?
Exactly right. Mm. And that's what I'm finding, because, you know, with the body talk system. So if we class that as a psychoneuroimmunology type process, understanding how the psychological and emotional state affects your immune system and the rest of the body, right?
Yeah. and the endocrine system, which is where the women's health fits in for me. So it's psychoneuroendoimmunology.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, that's what I've been up against, really, is, you know, coming in. First, I started as a physiotherapist. Mm. I kind of saw the limitations of that profession quite early on. I mean, it's a really cool profession, and they, you know, they do amazing things.
Yeah.
And you know, not to be confused with chiropractic or osteopathic education. You know, physiotherapists have to learn neurology as well, and they have to learn the cardiorespiratory system to quite a high level because they're working in intensive care units for people. So that, you know, it's a full spectrum healthcare. Mm. But for me, it was still something missing.
Yeah. You know. So there was that something missing. There's something not. We haven't quite nailed it.
Yeah, here. Yeah, right. Yeah. And the trigger for me was pain. You know, seeing my patients come in with, you know, having to try and deal with the pain first.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what we were taught was, you know, get in touch with your patient, make sure they've taken their meds before they come for physio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, how are we going to measure that accurately?
Right.
You know, if they're not in pain, yeah, we can get in there and mobilize or manipulate or, you know, shift what needs to shift physically. But, you know, how do we know? And so then I started looking at acupuncture. Because I came across that as a student, and one of my, I used to work as a caregiver in elderly care facilities, and one of the nurses there had just started studying acupuncture, and he was so pumped by acupuncture. Every time I see you, I used to do night shifts, right, and come and you never know what I've learned today. And I'm like, what? And he talked me through what he'd learned, and you know, it sounded like gibberish to me because he's talking about a whole different system. And yeah, you put needles here, and I said, what, you mean you can stick a needle in someone and they get better?
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, of course. And I was like, why didn't somebody tell me this?
Yeah.
So I went to, when I got back into uni, this is about in my second year, I asked the instructors about acupuncture, and one of them was an acupuncturist. So I ended up doing my dissertation on that.
Oh, did you?
Acupuncture for back pain, the effectiveness of acupuncture for back pain. So it was a subjective study, but it was pushed out to all physiotherapists that use acupuncture for pain relief.
Nice.
So it was a really cool insight, and then I went and studied acupuncture afterwards. So that was my insight. But the thing that got me, and this was only end of the 90s, the thing that got me was the resistance to that, even in mainstream departments.
Yeah. You know, and it's becoming more acceptable now.
Oh, yeah,
taken
totally.
A hell of a long time to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say what made me interested in, what made me think I didn't have all the answers in pharmacy was an experience I had about 20 years ago when homeopathy prevented the need for someone I knew requiring, I would suggest, Ritalin.
Okay.
And homeopathy did the job, and I was so excited about this. I bounded into this doctor's office and said, "Guess what? It's okay. Everything's fine."
Mm.
And honestly, he laughed me out of the room, and the humiliation was so great. This doctor who influenced my business, who influenced my career, was laughing at me. The humiliation kept me quiet for a long time, but didn't stop me looking around quietly, looking for what else was there to actually create a cure. Now, cure is something we're not allowed to use that word, are we?
No.
Cure? There's no such thing as cure.
Yeah.
Well, I would say rubbish. There is a cure.
Well, there are a couple of practitioners. One used to be based in Tauranga, actually, a very well-known homeopath and alternative medical practitioner. And he got set up. Someone went into his practice and said, "Can you cure this?" And he was busy treating someone and working with someone, however you want to describe it, you know. And his secretary went, "Yeah,
right."
And they came in and said, "You just said you could cure something, blah blah blah," and they nailed him. So he had to shut down.
That's tough, because that leads into linguistics, and by saying that you are in remission all the time, it kind of, well, to me, it indicates that there is something about to fall, but you're in remission.
Yeah.
Why not say I'm cured and be free of that?
Mm. Yeah.
Why not? What's wrong with that?
Well, remission, you know,
to me is like, nah, it's going to come back, but you're okay for now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just making money, right?
I hate to say that, but yes, I think so.
We've got to make a living.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to eat, so you better come back. The other argument that I have for homeopathy is, there has been heaps of research done on that.
Mm.
And there was actually, in a book called The Field, that was written in the
90s.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. She mentions that there was an Irish professor that did some research that took the original research protocol to see if homeopathy is going to work or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And wanted to set the argument once and for all. So she said, "I'm going to do this assessment, if you like, or this research, and prove that it doesn't work." So she got a number of different labs around Europe to run it separately and got all the results back, and it worked.
Yeah.
Yet she turned around and said, "I don't believe it, it still doesn't work."
Yeah, and there's that cognitive dissonance, and that's where science has an ego.
Yeah.
And I'm
totally
sorry, but right now, at the moment, we have a lot of ego happening
in
our science, and it is spilling over into people.
Keep it simple. Keep it honest, but if we can break it down, that takes the fear away, right? Because if we can break it down and simplify the explanation so everyone can understand it, it takes the fear away, right?
Yeah.
It's this fear of uncertainty and
problem is the spin that's being put on science, like statistics. You can make a chart look as dramatic as you like or as gentle as you like.
Mm.
You can, even the influence of colours in a pie graph can be startling or reassuring.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the science that we are seeing reported right now is putting a spin of fear into it.
Yeah.
And that's what really bugs me, is the linguistics and the angle that is coming out of the science.
Yeah. Well, and the major reporting, you know, organisations as well. If you look at, I think it was a couple of weeks ago on TVNZ, that's 60 Minutes on Sunday evening or something, they had a segment of this guy, Australian guy in his mid-30s, who had had COVID-19,
mm-hmm.
and he said, you know, he was still recovering. It was terrible. It mm-hmm. was, you know, and all they were talking about was the second wave.
Yeah.
You know, okay. So there's one guy who's in his 30s, mm-hmm. who's unfortunately got sick, yeah. right? But now he's better.
Yeah.
And he's still recovering, but he's better.
Yeah.
Okay. So why are they focusing on a second wave? Why aren't they going reassuring? Why aren't they being reassuring? Why aren't they saying, look, he's better. Okay, he's still feeling a bit weak at the moment, but there's plenty of things we can do to rebuild his immune system and to get his strength yeah. back and to get him back on his feet. You know, let's take a look at your nutrition. Let's take a look at other things that people
And let's
at,
so. Just treat you as someone who is recovering from a nasty bug.
Yeah.
It's a nasty bug. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. A lot of people, I've had friends who have had it. I think I've had it. Mm. And it was nasty.
Mm.
So you don't recover from a nasty bug, a nasty flu or a nasty cold the next day.
No, it takes a while, eh?
Generally it does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm. So, yeah, of course it's going to take a while to recover.
Yeah. So you went from being a chemist into being like a life coach and mentor?
Yeah, it was life coaching that, well, I went and studied kinesiology.
Oh, cool.
And that was fabulous,
yeah.
but it wasn't my calling. I'm better at talking to people.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
And so it started off as life coaching, and then it segued into what I'm really interested in, which is clearly health.
Mm.
And but I had a particular client who lived in Colombia when I was in Dublin. She lived in Colombia, and what she was suffering in a feminine way was so intense, it was destroying her life and destroying her relationship with her partner, and nothing was working. Well, we had a 3-hour session over Zoom.
Mm.
She was in Colombia, I was in Dublin, and as we went through this session, she actually said, I can feel everything is fizzing now, it's leaving, it's been heard.
Cool.
Well, that was like, oh my God, this is so important.
Yeah,
so important
yeah.
to have these things heard. And it sounds really crazy, and I know you use it with your body talk.
Mm.
We listen to the body, because the body and mind is a whole system.
Yeah.
Just like a car is a system of tires and gears and steering wheels and doors and windows, the body is a whole system.
Mm.
And we have been taught that anything of our, if our system goes wrong, we get pain.
Yeah.
Pain means please acknowledge information now.
Yeah.
It's information.
No,
it's not something to be shut up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I liken it to in any symptom.
Mm.
I liken it to a little child going, would you listen to me? I've got something to tell you. I've got something to tell you.
Mm.
But what we are doing with our body is suppressing that little child immediately, that little message. We suppress it because we just want it to go away.
Yeah.
As soon as we listen, then it's heard. Might come up with a different message. As you know, these things often reveal other things.
Mm-hmm.
But hearing it is so much more important and addressing that.
Creates so much awareness. Awareness creates change.
Absolutely.
So that's really cool to bring in the sort of system that I use. I use an analogy for people. So when they come in, you know, the first thing, if they have it, you know, the first thing is the pain is a reaction. Okay.
Yep.
And it's a distraction.
Yeah.
So, the way I describe it is there's so much noise going on in the head that you can't really hear anything else. You're mm-hmm. focused on that noise. Well, so is an emotional reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional reaction to distraction, it's a noise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I like to use this analogy to help people pull themselves back away from the reaction and mm-hmm. give them a little bit more space to work out what answers or what questions they need to ask or what answers mm-hmm. are there that they haven't seen yet because it's too noisy. Okay, so the first thing I say is, do you have a soul?
Yeah.
Okay. Does it ever die?
No.
Okay.
Mine doesn't.
So you're an infinite being?
I am.
Okay, hold your hand in front of your face. Is that you?
Yeah.
How can that be you? You just said you're an infinite being.
Know.
That's your body.
Yeah.
That's your game console.
Container.
Yeah, your game console. Right. Yeah. So we don't know who you are. You as an infinite being. Mm-hmm. But that's your body console.
Mm-hmm.
And your body console is a living being too.
Right.
But she's not infinite.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of like a game console.
Yeah.
She has a capacity.
Yeah.
She has a capacity for knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it's limited.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there anything an infinite being wouldn't know?
I don't imagine so.
Okay. So infinite being knows everything.
Yeah.
Okay. But the body has a limited capacity, so the body can't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but it can know certain things.
Okay. Yeah.
So it can know lots of things.
I believe the body knows a hell of a lot more than we mentally understand.
Absolutely. Yeah. So because the body is a living being,
mm-hmm.
right, it knows how to look after itself. Knows how to take care of itself.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where the pain thing comes in. If there's something going on, the body's going, got to pay attention to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do I need to be aware of to change this?
Yeah.
And this is where so sort of leading on, and I take them on from that. So what we've done is we've got infinite possibilities,
mm-hmm.
because the you, we don't know who you are, knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The body's a game console that knows what it's been taught.
Yeah.
Okay, and what you've gone out and learned.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the most powerful thing we can do?
The most powerful thing for me is to be curious and to create awareness. Curiosity is my
highest
value.
I ever got to get that one. Yes! So, thank you.
Curiosity is awesome.
Yeah, so what comes out of curiosity?
An awareness and a learning and an openness to be wrong as well.
Yeah. But if we keep it simple, I have to keep everything simple.
Okay,
mate.
Pull it back then.
Yeah. A question.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we ask questions,
mm-hmm.
without trying to find the right answer,
mm-hmm.
you're opening up to infinite possibilities.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been conditioned
to
do as you're told and give the right answer.
Yeah.
And so we haven't been conditioned to ask questions without trying to find the right answer.
Yes.
When we ask questions, if we're learning something, when we ask a question, it's generally, not every time, but generally because we already know the answer and we want confirmation,
mm-hmm.
that mm-hmm. answer we've got in our heads, mm-hmm. right. Yeah. And so that's where our power is, stepping into the power, is to ask questions without trying to find the right answer and learn how to structure that.
Yeah.
And to ask a question and let it go, knowing that the infinite part of you is going to go into the infinite library and pull out an answer because you've asked a question. You will get an answer. Ask and you will receive.
You may not get a mentally
exactly
answer that makes sense. The first thing that, when I had a frozen shoulder, the first thing I asked myself was, why would a body that's just running quite smoothly and perfectly suddenly have a seized up shoulder? You know, what is there about the shoulder that I'm not figuring out? Which took me down a whole lot of answers.
Yeah. And you're pointing to your left shoulder.
It was right. My left shoulder.
Okay. So left shoulder is heart protection.
That's what it was. Okay. Don't hurt my heart anymore.
Yeah. And the burdens of life and duty and shouldering responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, that's the consciousness for shoulders. So I mean that's what we look at in the body talk system is what is the consciousness? You know, a state of being is consciousness is a state of being.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so what is this person's state of being right now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the person's state of being in your case would be really painful, stiff shoulder.
Mm.
That's a major part of your state of being right now. Okay, so what's contributing to that? And what's the consciousness process behind that?
Yeah.
And that's why for me, kinesiology, Psych-K, the body talk system, NeuroLink, you know, there's other systems out there that use biofeedback to work out. And follow the route of the subconscious of the patient to go where they want to go and find out what is the consciousness aspects behind a pathology or a presentation.
Yeah, and I'm just going back to this woman that I worked with in Colombia. She was in a horrific child paedophilia ring, sold in by her parents. With her other brothers and sisters, and what she was starting to explore what was going on, and often an illness or symptoms come up from past trauma.
Yeah.
And for her, her trauma was intense.
Mm.
And the answers she was getting as we went through the coaching, the answers she was getting didn't make sense to her. Like the visualizations that were coming up, the messages, the words that were coming to her just didn't make sense. So even though she kind of knew what was going on, how the body represented it was quite weird. And at times she was even laughing. She's saying, God, I don't know what this means, but this has come up, you know. Yeah. So I think we try to come up with such a mental definition of what our illness means and what our symptoms mean that it gets a little bit scary. And if we are curious as to what comes up, we kind of are not invested in, we don't, what am I trying to say, we don't need to be as afraid.
Yeah, I think the reason we go down that track is because we've been conditioned also in the allopathic approach, if you
yeah.
like, or the approach of, you know nothing about you and go and see the expert.
Yeah,
right.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so it's like assess, diagnose, treat.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what we used to, and that's been working for, you know, a few hundred years, a couple thousand years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so and that's fine. But when you go and use biofeedback, when you ask the subconscious mind of the patient,
mm-hmm.
there can be no assess, diagnose.
Mm.
And this is, you know, what we touched on right at the very beginning about ego. Mm.
Yeah.
In medicine.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
ego in healthcare and ego in you know, in the medical world, if you like, is I've spent 7 years at university. I know the answer. How dare you argue with me? And I mean, that's an extreme. Okay, then not people like that.
Yeah.
But when we ask the subconscious of the patient, it's kind of like it's a communication between the subconscious of the practitioner and the patient. So mm-hmm. so the analogy I like to give is kind of like, well, we're in Tauranga.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, apparently the new capital of the empire.
we'll come on
to that in a second, right? The new king is now in Tauranga, right? King John.
It's amazing where curiosity takes you.
I know. But so I say, okay, we're in Tauranga. I don't know if anyone knows Tauranga that's listening. It's a small city in New Zealand, and we have a bridge in Tauranga. We have a number of bridges, but there's a bridge. Right, so if we take the bridge, the main bridge in Tauranga as the conscious mind.
Yeah, okay.
And all the suburbs in Tauranga and surrounding areas are the subconscious.
Yeah.
So when we use muscle testing or biofeedback, however you want to describe it,
mm-hmm.
It's like having a conversation with one of the suburbs. So let's just mm-hmm. say Matua is a suburb, so I'm having a conversation with Matua, and Matua is telling me everything that's going on in Tauranga.
Mm.
Where there's traffic jams, where the water's mm-hmm. not working, you know, where the Wi-Fi is not very good, where the electricity's, mm-hmm. you know, gone, etc., etc. And the rest of Tauranga is busy doing what it's doing. Yeah, it doesn't know I'm having a conversation with Matua necessarily. Where Matua is giving me all the information, I then help Matua broadcast that information through the whole of the body mind.
Yeah.
So the whole of Tauranga becomes aware of what needs to change where and how quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Tauranga starts to run really smoothly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of that. I like that analogy. I've been spending years trying to work out what resonates with people. You know, what will they understand straight away? And that seems to be one of the analogies that works best.
And that's a really good analogy. And I also get people to remember a time when they made a really great decision.
Mm.
And how it was like a no-brainer, everything went well, you felt, and just remember, just as you think of that time you made a great decision, feel into your body. How did your body actually feel? What was happening in your gut?
Yeah.
What was happening in your heart? What was happening in your head? Then think of a time where you made a really bad decision, a real crackingly bad decision. And how did it feel in your head? How did it feel in your heart? And how did it actually feel in your gut? And most people will identify a place in them, they'll actually be able to put their hand on their gut or their heart or something and go, God, what was I thinking? Or I knew that didn't feel right at the time. And so aligning the body with the mind, aligning the gut, aligning the heart and aligning the mind creates such an ease of wisdom, because our body doesn't forget and our body holds a hell of a lot of wisdom. That intuition comes from the gut.
Yeah.
The the sense of who am I?
Yeah.
And just working with a lady this week, she suddenly didn't know who she was going to be if she became a mother. Who am I? And that gave her, actually, it gave her the shits.
So emotional release.
Because our identity is held in our gut. Yeah. If your gut's not comfortable, it will release. Yeah. And it's like, shit.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why when we implement the session, so from the analogy, we broadcast that information. Yeah. So the way that we broadcast is by tapping the three brains, which is the head, the heart, and small intestine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's like an embedding process. Mm-hmm. So because there's no assessment diagnosis. Mm-hmm. It's just the person will create an awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And once you create awareness, you can shift. So once every part of the subconscious and the conscious mind has a story to recognize what needs to shift, and we embed it through the whole system, and people shift. And yes, active memory release is what we call it. There's a number of people that get the trot straight after. Yeah. It's like, I've even had that with remote sessions. I've got a colleague in Australia. Mm. I'll give a shout out to Aurelie Gibson. She's an international diving coach. Mm-hmm. And hi Aurelie, hope you're listening to this. And she, we used to do swap sessions and remote sessions.
Yeah.
I was working with someone one day at home, and she just, you know, inadvertently in Australia started a remote session on me, and I had a big emotional release to let get out the treatment room halfway through the session. Really, really apologetic because it's got so.
So I work with the there's a feminine space of wisdom as well, and quite often in women, the gut and the feminine space don't talk to each other.
Right.
And there, a lot of changes can happen when you actually tap into the feminine space. So this woman, and back to the woman in Colombia, her gut was in a state of protection and just had completely cut off that uterus, ovaries, that all the wisdom in that space, that feminine space, because there is a bunch of neurons down there which hold wisdom as well.
And it's about acceptance. So the uterus is, the inner consciousness of that is housing.
Co-creation.
Yeah, acceptance, rejection, a fear of ridicule, fear of rejection, it's genital consciousness. Self-preservation, which is ovarian consciousness.
Right.
And that, so, yeah. And also, especially if she's been physically
abused.
There's also the energetic projections of the abuser.
We managed to get rid of that too.
And this is what people don't realize, hey. There's so many dynamics to this.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things that we recognize is we call them networks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so it's not just a part of the body necessarily that the person will use to help process the consciousness. It can be a series of different locations through the body. And so they create this dissipation pathway, if you like, to help get rid of that intensity, the emotional charge.
Yeah.
And the problem is that when we create something like that, it's like creating a railway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, it's like you would be like you going, right, I'm tired of driving into town on that road. I'm going to build my own motorway. So you get a bulldozer out and you bulldoze yourself a motorway. It's going to be highly stressful because people are not going to be happy with you, you know, bulldozing through their sections. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then you start using it and for that dissipation, for that reason.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, I'm going to use it to go to the movies.
Yeah.
And then you suddenly realize, well, actually, it's really good. I'm going to use it to go to the supermarket as well.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take the kids to school along there and da da da. You know.
Halfway.
Yeah. But it's really high stress.
Mm.
And so, so those parts of the body get hammered even more because you're constantly using that pathway. And so it's about disconnecting that. And that's the active memory side of things. So the emotional charge plugged into a memory, if you've still got that, your body has to process it. So the soon as you disconnect the emotional charge from a memory, you no longer have to process it, and it's a release.
And the memory sets up little proteins, which sets up a physical effect in our muscles, so the body always remembers. And there's a fabulous book that it's sad it had to be written, but it's a great book. It's called The Body Keeps the Score, Bessel van der Kolk, and fabulous book about how the memory of the body is so strong that we it becomes unconscious. We don't actually remember in our head brains, so we suppress these memories through because we need to, or because we just don't need to think about it anymore. But the body keeps the score. And John Sano, have you heard of John Sano?
No.
How to Heal Your Back Pain, I think it's called.
Okay.
Brilliant book, and just talks about how back pain is actually a stress set up by the whole body, but it has to get your attention somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And often it is referred from something else, but it gets your attention in some way, which takes us back to pain. Please acknowledge information now.
Cool. Well, we'll get those links up, eh? So people can see those books out.
Those books are fabulous. Yeah, cool. And Gabor Mate, he does a lot of fabulous memories of the body influencing our health that we don't always exactly know what's going on.
So I mean, with the emotional dissipation pathways that we acknowledge, you know, there's four ways the body processes the emotion. So you know lungs, large intestinal repair.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lungs is the acute emotional release mechanism for us, so we can scream, shout, talk, cry, laugh, sigh, you know, sneeze, whatever. Anytime there's an exhalation, there's a potential for an emotional release. If people can't do that, if there's a suppression of ability to communicate and they don't want to talk about things, then you can still release, and that's done through the large intestine, right? So they go and get the trots when they go off. The next level is in the muscles, and which is why massage is so good. So look at that. And then the final area is the diaphragm, funnily enough.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like a colander, emotional colander, right? Mm-hmm. So it allows emotions up through into the lungs or down into the large intestine, or we lock it in there. And so there's a number of alternative points of view around childhood asthma, for instance. Okay, so if a little baby's given lots of frights because it's funny, what happens if we get a shock? Sometimes we don't like to revisit the range of motion the diaphragm was in at the time. So they don't take a full breath anymore. And they start to breathe apically. Secondly, the other component, that's cold foods. Because the lung meridian goes through the stomach, and if you eat too many cold foods, it shuts the stomach down a little bit.
That's
and disrupts the lung meridian.
Because I'm thinking of Wim Hof now.
Has done
incredible stuff with cold.
And
diaphragmatic control.
It's quite
interesting.
He's got a good breathing technique. So I watched a video of that the other day.
Terrific. And his immune system is sharp.
The breath. Perfect health.
You can't make him sick.
Yeah.
They tried to.
Did they?
Yeah.
Cool. He can make me sick. So do you have COVID-19, mate?
He wouldn't get it.
Funny that.
Yeah.
Good. Cool. Yeah. Oh, well. Thanks for coming along. It's been awesome to chat. Hope we can do it again.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Great conversation. I think we do the same thing in different ways.
That's
the joy of this, the whole alternative way of doing it. We do the same thing in different ways.
It's finding someone that you that works for you at the end of the day, isn't it? In alternative. It's finding what works for you. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
So if medication works for you, go for your life, you know. We're always going to need surgeons. People are always going to hurt themselves, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with the medical system. The medical system is a really fine-tuned machine.
We've got to get rid of the ego.
but also be accepting, or, you know, just because they're, you know, going right back to the start of the chat, you know, just because we haven't created something sensitive enough to measure homeopathy frequencies yet, doesn't mean they don't exist.
And who are we to say no, that didn't work?
Exactly right.
There's so much anecdotal evidence, and I just don't understand why people aren't happy to take anecdotal evidence as something valid.
Yeah, and for me, science, you know, is really, really important. It's what's advanced us and got us to where we are today. However, when it comes to the medical research now, I'm just a little bit more cynical. I think medical research is insanely important. It's so important that we do it. I just want to see who funded it.
Absolutely. And it's like before you start a session, you have an intention and a goal.
Yeah.
And we do that with my sessions, and it's the same with science. What is the intention?
Yeah.
Is the intention to find out that something will give you a side effect, or is the intention to find out that it will heal?
Yeah.
And there's a recent study that's been abandoned which just makes me shake my head. And and but the people are following it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we'll come on and do that another day.
Oh, that's another whole topic. God, I get a bit upset about that one.
Oh, well, before we sign off, let's just check out. I've got some information which I think is pretty cool, actually. Okay, and I mean, I studied it a long time ago, but I came across it the other day, and it just made me smile. And actually, it might be helpful for John the King. John the King from Tauranga. Okay.
Here
so
we go.
this is just for fun, right?
Yeah, okay, sure.
This is just for fun. So part of what we do is we look at the brain and the consciousness and the different parts of the brain, heart functions. We also look at the approach of, we like to use other system interpretations as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because when you're working with muscle testing or biofeedback, we can't not go somewhere just because we don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm testing your body and you want to use a traditional Chinese medicine interpretation, we've got to go there.
Yeah.
Even if I'm just have a basic knowledge of it, or the Ayurvedic system, or I don't know, has come on more than one occasion, crystals have come up.
Mm.
I mean, I don't really know too much about crystals and their healing vibrations and things, but if the person does, then we've got to go there.
Yeah, that's what they resonate with that. Sure.
Yeah. So we look at the brain quite closely, and this section's always made me smile, really.
Okay.
So when we look at the limbic system, we actually have 24 traits that are the same as lizards.
24
aspects of us are like lizards, right? So I'll call them out and see what you think.
All right.
Okay, cool. Right, so the first one, showing place preferences.
Yeah, absolutely. I have preferences for some places that I like to go and others that I don't.
But as simple as a car park.
Or
a seat in a classroom.
Oh yeah, yeah. Right? It's always easier to go and sit in that same seat on day two of a training, isn't it?
Yeah. So they have that, you know. So you know, sitting in routine seats.
Yeah.
Breakfast, dinner, table. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Having positions at the table for the family. Yeah.
Which sink do you like to use if you've got a double sink?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Second one is like patrolling territory.
Patrolling territory. Do I like to do that?
Well, lizards do that, but so do we, right? Installing security cameras.
I'm not that neurotic.
Auto alarms.
Auto alarms.
Yeah. Car alarms.
Car alarms. I can't say I've done that.
Yeah, but we do. Humans do.
Humans, lots of humans do. We've been taught to be afraid, so we need this to stay safe. I've never really subscribed to that.
Hiring security or calling the police if you need help?
Yes, I've certainly called for help. Absolutely.
So that's like, we do that.
Is that a lizard thing, or is that me just wanting to be?
No, it's a lizard thing, serious. And I'm sure there's some lizards that don't. There's people that don't call the police. Yeah, they don't have cameras up or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Ritualistically displaying in defense of a territory.
Like what?
So using colors and adornments, flags.
Okay. Yeah. Country when flags, I was in right? Ireland, I bought a New Zealand flag.
Just to let them know.
I'm a Kiwi.
And how many Irish flags do you see around here, or South African flags, or? You know,
I do love to see the odd Canadian flag or someone, you know, to show they are proud of their country, English flag or something. Yeah, it's nice. I quite like to see that.
Yeah. Door numbers as well.
Door numbers. Is that not just useful for your mail?
It is, yes, but that, you know, lizards.
Lizards like door numbers. Okay. I find it useful to find my house.
It's in the category, though. Anyway. It's in the category. Fighting formalized. Intra-species, so fighting themselves.
Well, there's plenty of people out there who are
scrapping amongst themselves, yeah?
In defence of their territory,
In defence of their territory, yeah.
Yeah. That's a standard one,
right? There's a lot of big groups who are doing that.
So we do that. And what's that all about? Money,
We'll
go there.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll go there another day.
It's a huge topic.
Yes. I'll have to cover the first 12 years of my adult life then, won't I? Okay. Triumphantly displaying a successful defence.
Yeah, high-fiving and jumping around. Yay, go me!
Yeah. But we also, won. Celebrating a win at war, right? VE Day, J Day. Marching through the city.
Yeah.
Pomp and ceremony.
Absolutely. Depends which side you are on.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Well, it's, in history, it's always the winning side that gets to tell the story, right?
Mm, yeah.
Okay. Assuming distinctive postures.
That's body language, isn't it?
Yeah, and coloration, signaling surrender, etc. like that. So we use white flags to surrender.
White flags, yeah.
You know, sending an apology note or sending flowers.
Sending flowers? Is that not just compassion? Do lizards do compassion?
Well, it depends on why you're sending the flowers.
If you're in the dog box, you're greasing up. But if if you really want to send flowers because you really do feel for that person, or hello, I'm thinking of you, yeah?
Yeah, but then there's a distinct postures that, you know, I want you to be mine. Here's some flowers.
Ownership. Ownership, right. Yeah. Right. Mm. Depends if that lands with the person who they're trying to own.
Foraging. Mm. We've got to do that to survive, right?
Yeah, food.
But we do it as shopping. So we build places to forage in. Hunting and gathering. Right? Yeah. Okay. We build things to forage in, right? They just go out and do it.
Yeah.
Hunting, that's simple. Yeah, hunting. We do that, yeah. Homing.
Like going to the same place every night.
Yeah. Having a home to go to.
Yeah.
Wanting to go home.
We definitely do that.
Heading home after the hunt or after a long day at work.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess work's hunting a different way, right?
Yeah.
Looking for money.
Yeah. Hunting for money. Yeah.
Hoarding.
Yeah. There's some cracking hoarders out there.
Yeah. Collecting art, coins.
Yeah, and I can say, having moved around the world a few times, the ownership of stuff that I have has gone completely down to zero.
Yeah, and toilet paper.
Well, you do want to make sure you have enough.
All those reptiles out there hoarding toilet paper for the last few times. So, using defecation posts.
Like scat and marking and
and that's graffiti, right?
Mm-hmm.
And marking your territory, gang area type and forming social groups.
Is a lizard brain a social being?
Forming social groups, organizing and joining teams, luncheons, staff meetings.
Oh, I'm very lizard. Networking. And
well, Kiwis are really good at networking.
That's
a really cool thing. Because it's a pioneering type culture, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, you can't do it on your own.
No, that's right. Mm. But number 8, why is good?
Yeah.
Establishing a social hierarchy. So they do that as well.
That happens, unfortunately.
Holding elections.
Oh, yeah.
It's coming up, right?
Yeah. I was thinking more of a group of friends, like a large group of friends, you know, the leader of the friends, the controller of the friends. Yeah.
Well, it's also, you know, inaugurations, coronations.
Yeah, yeah.
King John.
Or not.
Oh, my God. Okay. Greetings.
Greetings.
Yeah, so lizards greet each other. So saluting, waving, nodding.
I'm nodding.
See the lizards nod. Okay, cool. Grooming. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I can't wait for my haircut tomorrow.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it was so good to get a haircut, eh?
Yeah.
After 6 weeks, man. Engaging in courtship. With displays of using coloration and adornments.
Yeah, peacocking, absolutely. Yeah.
And you know, wearing jewellery and
Yeah.
Makeup looking good. Yeah. Looking good. Yeah. You know, yeah. Nice clothes. Obviously, mating needs no explanation. Breeding and in isolated cases with lizards attending offspring. So some of them do actually attend their offspring. So like crocs will attend their offspring.
Yeah. Yeah.
They guard the eggs and stuff.
Right? Yeah.
Some snakes do as well. Flocking. They'll flock together.
Yeah, it's like we were watching some orcas swimming along the sea a couple of weeks ago, and suddenly we were standing there and there was about 10 people around us.
Yeah.
What are you looking at?
Yeah.
And
also like rock concerts.
Rock concerts, yeah.
And
we flocked to those. The races, the rock concerts, the sales.
Black Friday.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Jeez.
Migrating and subsequent colonization.
Mm-hmm.
Hence New Zealand.
Hence we have New Zealand.
What else is there? Eluding predators.
Getting away.
Yeah.
And life preservation. Yeah.
And they're skilled in the art of deception as well. So hiding and hunting and striking.
Yeah, and that's the lizard brain we use for life preservation too, for safety as well. And it's something we jump to, isn't it?
Yep. Migrating and subsequent colonization. Well, we've said that.
Yeah, said that.
Mm. I think that's all.
Repetition.
Well, I could cut that out. I think we've done that. Selecting and preparing a home site.
Yeah, when we go shopping for a house go shopping for a country even, it's like you check it out, how do you feel about it?
And establishing your territory.
Yes.
How many scraps are going on because someone's put their fence
in the wrong place
and stuff like that, right? And making trails.
Mm-hmm.
That's following your, like we discussed earlier on, you know, that road into town, right?
Mm-hmm.
Going the same route every time.
Yeah, but... Yeah. Walk around the mount or up the mountain, there's plenty of trails that we follow.
But also habitual trails.
Yeah.
So going to work the same way every day.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
And habitual ways of thinking, which is a neurological trail.
Yeah.
Habitual ways of thinking that might not be so useful, but we're so stuck in that habit that we don't realise it.
That's our conditioning, right?
Yeah, conditioning. Yeah.
We'll come on to that next podcast. And making territories. Marking territories.
Marking territories.
Yeah, that's just fence posts around your section and things, right? And
for me, I just, having moved into my apartment, marking my territory was making sure the beds were made. That's the first thing I do in a new house is make the beds.
Okay, cool.
Mm.
Yeah. I think I have to put the bed together first.
Cool. Flat pack furniture. Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
That's some of the majority of the things we have in common with reptilians.
So what I understand is the reptilian brain is a really ancient part of
our brain.
It's
the limbic system, it's the oldest part. Yeah.
It's the oldest part, and it's the part we jump to when we are frightened or threatened scared. And
well, it's also how we work things out, right? So there's doubt centers. So it's mainly the thalamus, right?
Mm-hmm.
and so it's the doubt centers. You know how we tie in with the fight or flight mechanism.
Absolutely.
Behavioral approach and behavioral inhibition systems. Yeah. Whether we're going to argue a point.
Or run away.
Yeah,
and hide.
Yeah.
Or freeze.
Yeah. That's the worst one. That's actually comes up quite a lot in sessions, behavioral inhibition system, because we're not really, that's a really ancient system that was used when your life was really in danger but you couldn't run and you couldn't fight.
Mm.
You had to just freeze and hope for the best, right? And so it enabled you to do that.
Mm.
But there's nothing really in our general society, especially in, Western societies, that we're going to get into situations like that. It's not really used. But the type of scenarios that we get nowadays is usually money orientated stuff. You know, getting a bill that you can't run away from.
Yeah, that. But I just think of places like domestic violence or child abuse, those kids freeze. Yeah. They can't do anything. Yeah. They don't know the people they trust. Or you can't trust them. There's also a new one that's come into that, is there's the fight, flight or freeze. Mm. There's now fawning.
Okay.
The fawn is a reaction where you ingratiate yourself to your abuser. Where you don't know why you do it, but you, I think it is a form of safety. Keep them close.
That's what happened in the Olympics that time, wasn't it? Where was that again? Munich, where they the terrorists
the bombing.
No, they got hostages.
Yeah.
So the terrorists took hostages at, I think it was the Munich Olympics.
Yeah.
Back in the '70s, maybe.
Yeah.
And they that was the thing. When you're taken hostage, you
Make friends with your captors.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories of that, and it's all about life preservation, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's when we flip into lizard brain. Life preservation is so important. It takes away our logical brain, the BS center in our brain. It goes offline.
That's part of the problem, though, eh? Is we've been conditioned to do as we're told and give the right answer.
Mm. Yeah.
So, and that's what freezes people, because they haven't been told what to do.
They haven't been allowed to think.
Yeah.
Problem solving.
And they're waiting for someone to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
And they don't know what the right answer is.
And that was a case a friend of mine just said the other day. She was in a earthquake in Wellington. It was a big one in the middle of the night. They were all out in their 90s and pyjamas. And she said in that moment, this is a lawyer friend, she said, in that moment, I just wanted someone to tell me what to do and I would have done it.
Mm.
She was completely offline thinking.
Mm.
And now she's a fully capable person, but she said in that moment, just tell me what to do and I'll go and do it.
Yeah. So
it's spooky how we can be put into that reptilian brain survival
and
without knowing it as well.
And that's the game console going into reaction.
Yeah.
And to being distracted. So as long as we're in that game console, bang. As soon as we recognise that fear is just a peptide that's been released that's made us feel that way.
False events appearing real.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And or worry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or grief or whatever. You know, it's once you're in that reaction, it's like a class A drug, right?
Yeah.
So you can't help going into reaction. But you can pull yourself out of it by recognizing you've gone into reaction.
Yeah.
And going, okay, wow, this is really powerful. I'm feeling really fearful.
But sometimes that feeling is so familiar that it feels safe.
Yeah.
And we don't realize that we are putting ourselves into this fear because it feels comfortable. It's a weird, it's an oxymoron.
We're peptaholics. Addicted to the peptides that we produce, which is why people keep perpetuating the same life story over and over again. Right?
Yeah.
You know, they'll go back into an abusive relationship.
Yeah,
over and over again.
A rotten life, but it's what I know and it's comfortable.
Well, it's just they're addicted to that hit.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And what I say is, you know, you might have five mates, you know, and you're going through something.
Mm.
You'll go, okay, I'm not going to speak to them. I'm going to speak to them. So you pick five up, talk, and it's because they'll bounce back off you because they're getting a hit too.
Mm, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, buying into the drama.
Yeah.
Buying into
if one of the other mates wasn't going to do that, then you don't want to speak to them because you're not going to get your hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I've got. I have a few really good friends who are. I've given them full permission to call BS on. You know, if I start going into that downward vortex of fear or scary or something, and I said, please just haul me out by the ears because you know I can't see it's happening.
So
it's good to have those friends. It's like, damn it, I don't want to hear this from you, but yeah, you're right.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Thanks so much for coming today.
Pleasure.
That's really cool.
Pleasure.
It's great to catch up again, and maybe we'll do this again, eh?
I think so.
Awesome.
I think so. Mate.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Take care. Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to Limitless Mind, Limitless Body. Thanks for joining us today. If you'd like to hear more from Paula Ralph, you can visit her at Paula Ralph Health Show on podcasts. Thanks for allowing us to contribute to your life. We're really grateful for that opportunity. As I look forward,
I'm going to take a closer look at how we've been conditioned and how that's limiting us in the next podcast. Hope you'll join me. I'm John Swanepoel.